Welcome to Hannah's Heart.
So Hannah, she's just one of the women who did struggle with infertility in the Bible.
No matter who we are, we can be inspired by the fact that Hannah took her pain to God and God heard her and was with her.
So when she was praying at the temple, she had been weeping and not eating, and her lips were moving, but her eyes were closed, and the priest was like, why are you drunk at the temple?
Because yeah. It can become an obsession when you want a child so deeply.
And desiring that baby and to be a mama. Every holiday, every Mother's Day.
This is not a show that's going to promise you a certain outcome. But this is a show that says, however God answers your cry, we know that He's enough. Hey everybody, I'm Kendra, and you're listening to Hannah's Heart on American Family Radio. If you're new to our show, this is a show for couples who are struggling with infertility or miscarriage, and we just want to walk through life with you and encourage you to cling to Christ because He is enough. I have been through both of those things. I know how difficult it can be, and I also know that God is your rock. And He can bring joy on the darkest days. So this show kind of started out to talk about those subjects, but we have expanded to talk about things like fertility treatments, to talk about fostering and adoption and some of the different ways that God ends up building your family. So today we're going to be talking about adoption, and I have a distinguished guest with me in the studio, my beloved father, Dave White, who also happens to be a licensed mental health therapist with how many years of experience?
35.
Many years of experience. My beautiful co-host, Anne, is not with me today, but I am joined by my lovely father, who not only has experience in mental health and counseling, but also has personal experience in our topic today. And we want to talk about adopting older children and some of the concerns that people have or questions that they have when they might be considering that, and maybe some of the reasons that God might call you to step up and adopt an older child. But first, to give you a little context, Dad, tell me about how exactly you and Mom met, because I think that'll help our listeners understand our topic.
Well, we met at a children's home in Kentucky, where we're from. We were both working there. The children there in general were abused or neglected children that had been removed from their parents' homes. They were not going to necessarily go back to those homes. So that's where we met. I was a therapist, a house parent. She was a teacher at that point, and we met there 43 years ago.
And you thought she was pretty, didn't you? Well, I know Mom has told me stories about having knives pulled on her and just like some really crazy intense stuff that you guys dealt with in that time of your life. But you ended up adopting children of your own, right? So talk briefly about that.
Sure. That's what we did. We adopted three boys. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'll get to that in just a second. But what we're talking about is adopting older children. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by older children is that these are kids that have already gone through what psychologists and child care experts say are the formative years of development, generally between age 0 and 8 years. Those are the times where children are growing the most, whether it be spiritually, mentally, physically, cognitively, in every which way. So these are children that are older than that. Some of them are in the even in the teenage years. By and large, they are children that are harder to adopt. There are many, many out there. I know in our state alone, there's several hundred that are available right now for adoption. They come with a lot of problems as well.
Because emotional baggage.
Emotional baggage is a lot that because of the abuse or neglect or that they've experienced in their lives, they have great difficulty accepting and adjusting and becoming another part of another family. That doesn't mean, and let me stop you right there, that it's not possible, because it very much is possible. If we believe that Jesus Christ has the ability to change somebody's mind, then we certainly believe that Jesus can change their mind, their emotional outlook on life, They can't change the past, but we can heal the past. Mm. And so that's what a lot of loving Christian parents hope to do with the children that they're adopting. Hard part about that is because, again, that those formative years that you had, someone else raised your child. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have the experiences necessary in those years to help develop them in the way that you would hopefully that they would go to in the rest of their lives.
And they probably had a lot of seeds sown into their life and heart, and maybe even negative things spoken over them.
Absolutely.
And it's like you have to weed a garden before you can even plant and continue to grow that child. You have to maybe pull a couple things up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in our own case, we have adopted three boys, all of Kendra's older brothers. Mm-hmm. And the first two were 7 and 8 when we got them, or 8 and 9 when we formally adopted them. They were our biological siblings. Mm-hmm. They were part of a 5-sibling group. Their biological mother had actually had 10 children altogether. 5 had been removed by another state. Mm-hmm. Rights were terminated. And then the 5 youngest ones were in our state of Kentucky, and also had been rights had been terminated, and they were open for adoption.
And just to paint a picture, this is like within a year of your marriage that you started fostering.
Right.
Very early. You guys just had a heart for it.
I don't necessarily recommend that by any means. Mm-hmm. Because it was very early in our marriage, and we were still learning how to be a couple. Mm-hmm. And how to.
But you were very equipped also from your experience working at the children's home. So you
correct.
Had a little more.
Well, hopefully, anyway. Hopefully, we did. Hopefully, we didn't damage them in any way. Now, when I talk about the problems that we had with them, yes, certainly there were many, many issues. We had stealing, running away, setting fires, physical fights, cursing, just all sorts of things that we had to deal with over the years. But again, I don't regret adopting mm-hmm. them at all. It was something that mm-hmm. God placed on our minds and our hearts, mm-hmm. and it was very much something that we're glad we did. Mm-hmm. So the third child that we adopt, also a boy, was not part of their biological sibling group. We adopted him several years later. He was a burn victim. He had been removed from his biological home at age of 18 months because mom's boyfriend, who was not his father, had physically abused him, and he had, I believe it was something like about 20 broken bones at 18 months of age. And so he was placed in foster care, and by 3 years old, he was a healthy little blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid that was just absolutely adorable. And basically due to the neglect of the foster mother, he was playing unattended in a basement in a crawl space and tipped over a rototiller, and the gas from the rototiller went over the hot water heater, came back and exploded, and he had burns, third-degree burns from his chest all the way down to his knees. Mm. So he became special needs at that point. He had had a failed adoption, so we got him at 6, and then by 7, we were able to adopt him. Back to the first two boys, their mother, as I said, had 10 children that had all been, rights had been terminated. One of our two boys was, at age 3, was also playing with matches and accidentally set a fire on the house. The mother was able to get the children out, mm-hmm. but her husband, the father of the boys, was not able to get out. He was in a wheelchair, and he was burned and killed in the fire. Mm. Several years later, when my son was 7, she came up to him and said, "You killed your father. Mm. I don't love you anymore. Here's your suitcase. Get out of my house." So he was literally found wandering the streets of one of our major cities in Kentucky with a little bag in November, barefoot. And that just gives you a general idea of the emotional trauma mm-hmm. that these kids have gone through. Physical abuse, neglect, and it goes on and on. And they carry these for a number of years after in their lives.
What were some of the first, like, practical things that you had to help as a child like this comes into your home? What were some of the practical
Sure.
Weeds you had to pull up.
Sure. Our first two boys, were 7 and 8 when we first got them. And I remember the very first night, my wife gave them a toothbrush and said, okay, it's time to brush your teeth. And neither one of them had any clue what that was. They didn't know what a toothbrush was. They didn't know how to do that. So there was a lot of very basic training that we had to do. Because they had been severely neglected, they had moved constantly. There was never a lot much food in the house. Trash had been piled up several feet high in their last home that they had been removed from. They were not sure that there would always be food in the home. So they frequently hoarded and hid food that we had for them. For instance, if we had a hot dogs, they would steal one and stick it under some pillow or something, and because they didn't know that they weren't going to have food later on. We found bananas under beds and on and on for several weeks until they finally did realize that there was always going to be food. And we sat down with them once and showed them the cupboards and the freezer and the refrigerator and said, hey guys, you know, it's here. You don't have to worry about that anymore. But that's just another indicator of some of the extreme neglect that these children have unfortunately had.
Wow. So sad.
So one thing that I would suggest is that a lot of these children have a very poor self-image. And everything that I'm talking about here would also apply to foster parents, too, that are fostering these type of children. They are still children. They're still creatures and created by God, and they need to know the Heavenly Father just as much as anyone else does. So one thing that we tried very early on with all of our boys was to introduce them to a loving relationship with Jesus Christ. Our first two boys had been grossly neglected, as I've explained, and their reading skills were very, very behind. So the first summer that I had them, we had a very thick book of little Bible stories. And each story was maybe 2 or 3 pages, and it was on their supposed grade level. And then there would be questions at the end for comprehension. And so every day I would read, or they would read to me, about 2 of those stories, and then answer the little questions. And then at the end of that, we would talk about how that relates to their life today and how it's important to know Jesus Christ. So we had given them a basic understanding of basically the whole Bible during that summer. I wish I could tell you that all 3 of those boys who are now men, one is 50 and the other in their late 40s, have personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Unfortunately, they don't. One does.
Very recently, had a dramatic transformation that gives me goosebumps.
Absolutely.
I'm so proud.
Very active in church, leads his family in prayer, reading his Bible. I wish I could say the same thing for the other two boys, but unfortunately that's not the case. And so so we have to be very careful, you know, in trying to do that. But I think any family would have that same issue. Not every child that's going to, you're going to grow up in a Christian family is necessarily going to accept Christ at an early age.
And those seeds have still been planted, and we trust that God is still working.
Absolutely.
You talked about earlier one of my brothers that was told that he murdered his father. You know, he was blamed for some of the abuse and things that happened to him. I think about how, you know, I've just had a baby, and I am speaking positive things over her from the moment she's in my arms. Oh, you're beautiful. Oh, you're going to be so kind. You're going to, even though she's so young, I feel like the words that we speak over children have, you know, a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Absolutely.
So how did you start to find out some of the negative things that they had heard about themselves and to help them build a self-image?
A lot of it by simply talking with them. And these kids were not used to being talked with adults that were accepting and loving them. So we established routines, which are very, very important in older kids' adoption. where every night we would have some quiet time with mm-hmm. them one-on-one. During the day, there would always be certain things that we would always do. We never sent them off to school without a, hey, I love you, have a great day, mm-hmm. and hugs and that type of stuff. But as they eventually would open up, we would talk about how that's not life now. Mm-hmm. And you can be assured that Dad is not going to hit you if you come home 5 minutes late from playing outside. Mm-hmm. That Mom is not going to send you to bed without supper because she doesn't have money for supper, mm-hmm. because she went out and spent it on drugs or alcohol. Mm-hmm. So we assured them that their life was very different. And over time, they began to see that, mm-hmm. and began to recognize that life really was different.
Wow. That's important. And, you know, speaking those positive words, I'm sure that's difficult when you're in the middle of correcting them constantly, to also be able to sprinkle in all of those.
Absolutely.
And, you know, what your parents think about you, it's not just what anybody thinks. What someone who is close in your life says about you really matters. So I'm sure if a parent had said those hurtful things, that it takes years to kind of rebuild that self-image.
And we had to constantly also remind them that they weren't doomed to repeat their biological parents' mistakes, mm-hmm. Because a lot of times they thought they were. They thought they were going to be the exact same way. Dad was an alcoholic. I'm going to be an alcoholic, and, mm-hmm. and there's nothing I can do to stop that. Mm-hmm. And so we had to constantly remind them that that was not the case, that they were responsible for their own actions, mm-hmm. just as their parents were responsible for their actions, their biological parents.
Now, how do you do that without, like, speaking ill of their parents? You know, because I'm sure you're trying to protect that they have this person that they still care about, even if they treated them poorly.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we'll make comments like, your mom may have made some bad choices, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that she was a bad person. Mm-hmm. Maybe she didn't have many parenting knowledge or idea how to be a parent, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that she was an evil, horrible person. Mm-hmm. So that was something we had to constantly do. And then we also had to talk to them about as much as we could tell them about their biological parents. Now, because I was in the system, worked within the system, I had a lot more information about their biological parents than most adoptive or foster parents necessarily mm-hmm. would. But one thing that I think is really important is to have the social workers who actually were involved in the removal mm-hmm. of those children at an appropriate time in their development talk to them about the real reasons that they were removed from their home. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times the biological parents will sugarcoat the reasons, mm-hmm. will say it's just an outright lie, I wasn't an alcoholic. I did do everything they said the state said I should have done to remove to get mm-hmm. you back. But remembering that termination of a parental rights for children is not an easy thing to accomplish. Mm-hmm. There has to be an abundance of evidence from the state to be able to get to that point where a child is removed from their home mm-hmm. and then subsequently opened up for adoption. Mm-hmm. So it's important that kids know as much information as they can, and again, as is appropriate for their age and for their development. Sometimes they'll want to try to go back to those biological parents, mm-hmm. And it has to be explained to them that that's not necessarily possible to do. In our state, the biological parents' names are actually removed from the birth certificate, and the original birth certificate, and there's no mention of them anymore in the birth certificates. And so that's sometimes hard for children to understand why they can't just go back. And again, sometimes it's better not to actually come from the adoptive parents, but to the actual social workers that remove them, so that the anger is not, well, you all are not letting me go back. But if the social workers can explain, no, it's not their choice to do that. The judge has made the decision. Social services has made the decision, not your adoptive parents.
So let's say you have a child that later on in life wants to reconnect with their biological family. In some cases, it's a yes, some cases a no. Do you have any tips for how to facilitate those conversations?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I always recommend that the adoptive parents make contact first with those biological parents to really feel them out and to see if that's going to be appropriate and to see if it's going to be healthy mentally and cognitively for the children. Mm-hmm. Because again, sometimes the biological parents are going to sugarcoat this and make it a situation where, oh, we didn't do anything wrong. And that's only going to further confuse the mm-hmm. children and make it harder for them to be able to really adapt and become a part of their new adoptive family. So meeting those parents first, talking with them, setting some real firm guidelines and ground rules for any type of other introduction back to those biological parents is absolutely necessary. Fortunately, we didn't have to worry about that with our children. Our third son, who had been removed at 18 months, didn't remember his biological mother at all. I asked him at one time, would you ever want to meet her? And he said, absolutely not. If she didn't love me enough to protect me and keep me safe, then I don't want to meet her at all. The first two boys, of course, were older, and they did know, they knew their father, biological father, had perished in the fire, mm-hmm. and their biological mother actually died about a year after they came into our care. So that wasn't an issue either. Recently, I was talking to one of them, though, and I said, do you ever, you know, miss them? Do you ever think about them? Do you ever wish you could see them again? And he looked at me and he said, Dad, I call you Dad. I call Mom, Mom. I call them by their first names. That ought to tell you something right there. They're not my parents. You and Mom are not my parents. Mm-hmm. So fortunately, we didn't have to deal with that, but
there was some interest as they got older about learning about them and connecting.
About learning about them, definitely, and about having contact with their biological siblings, mm-hmm. Which actually we encouraged and assisted them in doing.
Mm-hmm. Even during the years.
During those younger years, we assisted them in doing that. I found out where they were and called their adoptive parents and made arrangements for the boys all to get together. Mm-hmm. And they did that several times. And I know they have had contact even in recent years. We had one of the boys come, their brothers come over for Thanksgiving dinner a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And so we're never going to stop that from happening because that's part of their background. That's mm-hmm. part of their life. You know your aunts and uncles. You know your grandparents, mm-hmm. Kendra. You saw them. You grew up with them. They came to your birthday parties. They came to everything. Well, adoptive children are going to have the same type of desires and understanding. Mm-hmm. And so adoptive parents should certainly cultivate that mm-hmm. and try to assist them in any way possible mm-hmm. in doing that. Social media is another issue that's kind of hard at this point, too, because it's certainly out there now. And so you have to be careful with kids on social media as they get older because their biological parents may contact them some way through that. And that could be even more confusing.
Well, we are soon going to be out of time, but I want to let you guys know we are going to have this distinguished guest, my father, on for another week to go even deeper into this topic of what it means to adopt or foster older children. But before we wrap up, I just want you to speak to any parents who might be considering doing this and maybe give them a little encouragement.
Absolutely. As I said early on, adopting older children for us, I can only speak to our own case, was not a mistake. It was a blessing. Mm-hmm. We have wonderful contact with our boys.
And they're thriving. They're doing great. They're working
well.
Hard. They're
all
providing
married.
For their families.
They're all married. They all have children. They all have steady mm-hmm. jobs. They have two of them own their own homes. Mm-hmm. So they love us. Mm-hmm. They want contact with us. They'll call us and visit us and bring their children to our home because those children are my grandchildren, just as your mm-hmm. two precious mm-hmm. daughters are my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So
I can't imagine life without them.
Absolutely. And I can't either. There were difficult problems, mm-hmm. but if you're committed to the adoption and committed to the relationship, forming a relationship with the children and loving them, nothing is not possible.
You know, just to end, I want to finish on that verse that says that true religion is to take care of the orphan and the widow in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. That word orphan doesn't say only if they're a baby and it's a simple situation. That mandate for us to take care of the orphan and the widow applies to whatever situation, whatever their background may be. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to Hannah's Heart. Join us again next week for a little more detailed information about how you can adopt older children.